Welcome, curious minds, to the deep dive. Today, we're plunging into something incredibly complex, but, well, absolutely vital. We're looking at how we keep our power grid stable and reliable.
It's that constant balancing act, isn't it? The thing that makes sure the lights stay on when you clip the switch.
Exactly. It keeps everything humming along. And our mission today, really, is to pull out the key insights from a very focused piece of work.
Right.
We're digging into a white paper from Elia, they're the Belgian grid operator, and these insights are being carefully put together into a report for Energinet.
That's Denmark's TSO, their transition system operator for electricity and gas.
Correct. So we're aiming to give you that shortcut, that deep understanding of what's really going on here.
And it's perfect timing for this, wouldn't you say? Understanding these grid balancing models, it's not just some technical detail anymore.
No, it feels much bigger.
It really is. For any modern grid operator, getting these models right is absolutely fundamental. It's key for cost efficiency, it's key for integrating renewables, which is huge now, and of course for resilience.
Making sure the system stays strong.
Exactly. So for an organization like Energinet, this stuff connects directly to their big picture goals. You know, a sustainable, secure, affordable energy future for Denmark.
Okay, so let's unpack that. The core challenge is grid balancing, right?
Yeah.
Matching generation with consumption second by second.
Always has been the name of the game. Supply equals demand. Constantly.
But it feels like the game's changed. With renewables, like wind and solar, which aren't always on, that makes it way, way more complicated, doesn't it?
That intermittency throws a huge wrench in the works. And this report for Energinet, it dives right into the different models, the different ways operators are trying to manage this new reality.
Different models. Okay.
Exactly. The analysis basically breaks them down into two main camps. Mm. You've got centralized models and decentralized models.
Centralized and decentralized. What's the gist of each?
Well, in a centralized model, you typically have one main entity, usually the TSO, the grid operator, making the big calls in real time.
Kind of like an air traffic controller for the grid.
That's a great analogy. Okay. They're dispatching power from the big predictable sources, like traditional power plants, managing frequency, keeping an eye on everything from the top down using, you know, sophisticated control systems.
Okay. So the assumption there is about big predictable power sources.
Largely, yes. It assumes robust supply, large-scale infrastructure. Now, contrast that with a decentralized model.
Right.
That pushes the decision-making, the control, much closer to the edges of the grid. It uses lots of smaller, often local resources.
So less like one conductor, more like lots of smaller players.
Kind of like a jazz ensemble, maybe. More autonomy for individual parts, but they still work together. Mm-hmm. We're talking rooftop solar, batteries in homes or neighborhoods, smart appliances adjusting automatically.
Built-in man response, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Even peer-to-peer energy trading in local microgrids. Elia, for instance, they've run projects looking at small industrial parks, managing their own local generation and storage.
Interesting.
Yeah, showing how that local control can actually help stability. So the underlying ideas are really different. Agility, responsiveness, using the flexibility of many smaller parts.
Mm-hmm.
And this distinction matters hugely because it shapes everything, investments, operations, even how the energy market is designed.
That distinction feels critical. And the report doesn't just define them, right? It looks at them from different angles.
Absolutely. That's where it gets really interesting. It sort of stress tests them. The first big angle is cost efficiency.
Okay, the bottom line. Managing a national grid must have massive costs involved.
Huge. Every decision hits the budget. And what Elia's experience shows about cost, well, it's not straightforward.
So,
at first glance, you might think a purely centralized system is cheaper. You know, economies of scale, fewer big assets, standardized procedures.
Seems logical.
But Elia found their long-term costs actually started climbing significantly when they tried to force-fit huge amounts of renewables into that old centralized structure.
Uh-huh.
They had big expenses upgrading lines, buying expensive backup services to handle the ups and downs of renewables, managing more grid traffic jams, basically. The cost of flexibility in that rigid system, it shot up unexpectedly.
So what looked streamlined on paper ended up having these hidden or maybe just emerging costs when faced with renewables. What about the decentralized side? Did Elia see savings there?
They did, yeah, but the cost profile was different. Their analysis showed decentralized projects often needed more upfront investment.
For things like smart meters, communication tech.
Exactly. Advanced metering, smart grid systems, maybe local market platforms. But crucially, they offered significant savings in operational cost down the line.
Okay, trade-offs.
Right. For example, they ran pilots using flexible demand and local storage in certain areas, and these showed, I think it was up to a 15% drop in the cost of buying balancing services over about 3 years.
15%, that's quite something.
It is. By using those local resources, they didn't need as many big system-wide actions. So Elia's data suggested that investing smartly in distributed tech could actually lead to better overall cost efficiency in the long run.
That cost piece is vital, and it links straight into the next challenge, doesn't it? Integrating renewables. Because even a cheap system isn't good if it can't handle wind and solar.
Precisely. That leads us right to the second angle. Renewable integration. How well do these models cope with sources that aren't always on?
And this is where the differences really show up.
Oh, definitely. The traditional centralized model built for predictable power plants. It often struggles with the variability you get from wind and solar.
Why is that?
Ilya's experience showed their central control systems, which were optimized for large units, had real trouble forecasting and managing thousands of smaller intermittent sources like rooftop solar or wind farms.
Just too many moving parts, too unpredictable.
Exactly. It meant they had to keep more power in reserve, just in case. They had to constantly adjust flows, sometimes even telling wind farms to stop generating because the grid couldn't handle it.
Curtailment, yeah.
Right. Ultimately, it slowed down how quickly they could connect new renewables because of those stability worries, trying to just bolt renewables onto that old system. Ilya found it was like forcing a square peg into a round hole. Constant, expensive adjustments needed.
So the centralized system becomes a kind of bottleneck, needing constant intervention. Does the decentralized approach offer a more, well, a more natural home for renewables?
That's exactly what the report details. A decentralized setup, using smart grids and local energy markets, is inherently better designed to absorb and manage these fluctuations.
How does that work in practice?
Well, Ilya found that by working with local aggregators, companies that bundle lots of small resources together, and what are called virtual power plants, or VPPs.
Right, pooling resources.
Exactly. They could take hundreds of small renewable generators or batteries and make them act like one single manageable resource from the TSO's perspective.
Yeah.
It drastically cut down the complexity for the central operator.
So it simplifies things upstream.
Yes. They had examples working with local groups managing rooftop solar in cities, using smart inverters, smart appliances. They showed how that local flexibility could almost completely smooth out the local ups and downs.
Meaning those fluctuations didn't even reach the main grid?
Largely, yes. It prevented them from causing problems higher up. So it wasn't just about coping with renewables, it was actively enabling more of them by making their variability useful for grid support.
That's a huge shift in thinking. Okay, so we have cost, we have renewable integration, but then there's the resilience piece, making sure the grid can handle shocks.
Absolutely crucial.
Yeah.
Storms, equipment failures, even cyber threats, the grid needs to withstand them. So the third angle is system resilience.
How do the models compare here? Keeping the lights on when things go wrong.
This is a top priority, obviously. The analysis looks hard at how centralized versus decentralized approaches affect stability and uninterrupted supply.
So a big centralized system. Strong, maybe, but vulnerable.
Potentially, yes. While it's robust in theory, it can have single points of failure. Elia's own history showed that if a major transmission line or a huge power plant goes offline,
it can cause cascading problems.
Right. The impact can spread quickly, leading to wide blackouts, and getting things running again, what's called a black start, can take a long time, hours, sometimes days. The whole system depends heavily on a few critical pieces.
Sounds like having all your eggs in one basket, a very big, important basket.
That's one way to put it.
But hang on, wouldn't a decentralized system with all those small parts be incredibly complex? Maybe introducing new failure points, like coordinating everything, or cybersecurity risks?
That's a really important question, and the report tackles it directly. Yes, decentralization adds complexity,
mm-hmm.
but Ilya's work indicated it also distributes the risk.
Spreads it out.
Exactly. With lots of smaller, distributed resources, the system might actually be more inherently resilient. Think, many hands make light work. If one part fails, others can often keep operating.
Or isolate themselves.
Yes, islanding. Ilya ran simulations. They modeled scenarios where local microgrids with their own generation and storage could disconnect from the main grid during, say, a cyber attack or a storm.
And they kept running locally.
They did, keeping essential services powered in that area. So it sort of contains the damage, minimizes the blast radius of a disruption.
So the report sees these distributed capabilities as a plus for resilience.
It does. Now, the coordination challenge is real. You need advanced communications, strong cybersecurity, sophisticated management systems, often called DERMS, distributed energy resource management systems.
Right. It's not simple.
No. But the report evaluates these decentralized models on their ability to maintain stability and recover faster by using that local autonomy. Ilya's conclusion was that a strategically decentralized grid isn't chaos.
It's more like a mosaic.
A mosaic of self-healing cells, yeah. That enhances overall resilience against a wider variety of threats. It's a diversified defense, less reliant on any single critical component.
Okay, this is fascinating. We've looked at cost, renewables, resilience. Comparing these centralized and decentralized approaches through Elia's experience. So let's bring it back. What does all this actually mean for EnergyNet? What's the practical point of this deep dive for them?
That's the key question. The whole point of analyzing Ilya's white paper this way is to generate actionable recommendations specifically for EnergyNet.
So it's not just theory.
Not at all. It's meant to be a practical roadmap. The report aims to help EnergyNet apply the lessons learned, the hard-won experience from Belgium, to meet their own specific strategic goals in Denmark.
Can you give an example?
Sure. If Ilya found, say, that a particular way of designing local flexibility markets saved a lot on balancing cost, the report would suggest how EnergyNet might pilot something similar within Danish rules.
Tailoring it to their context.
Exactly. Or if Ilya saw better resilience from certain microgrid designs, EnergyNet gets guidance on maybe trying those designs in critical areas in Denmark. It's about translating models and results into concrete steps.
So EnergyNet doesn't have to start from scratch. They can learn from Ilya's journey.
Precisely. It helps them optimize their own grid balancing strategy for the future, building on what's already been learned elsewhere.
Well, there you have it. Understanding these nuances, centralized versus decentralized grid balancing, it's clearly not just for engineers anymore, is it?
No, it's fundamental.
It seems absolutely essential for shaping our energy future, balancing those costs, bringing renewables online effectively, and crucially, making sure the system is tough and resilient. Ilya's experience offers some powerful pointers for operators like EnergyNet.
It really does. And if we think about knowledge being most valuable when it's applied, it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
How so?
Well, how might the lessons we've talked about today from balancing a nation's power grid spark ideas in completely different fields that also deal with complex systems?
Beyond electricity.
Yeah. Think about optimizing global supply chains. Or designing smarter, more responsive cities, or even managing data flow in huge distributed cloud networks.
Ah, the underlying principles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Centralized command versus distributed control, cost trade-offs, integrating new elements, building resilience. These ideas have surprisingly broad relevance, far beyond just keeping the lights on.
That is a powerful thought. Taking these system-level principles and seeing where else they apply, it shows how interconnected these challenges really are.
It does indeed.
We really encourage you, our listeners, to keep exploring how these concepts might pop up in your own areas of interest. That informed curiosity, it can really light up understanding in unexpected places. Until next time, keep digging deeper.